This is the age of being real. Stories about people who have found their unique path in life at any age. I'm Rhonda Miller. Quaker minister Sally Hyneman is on a path that veers dramatically away from the Chicago suburb where she was raised and far from the expectations of her wealthy family. Hyneman was expected to be a debutante. She nixed that idea in her junior year of high school. She told her mother she didn't want to be presented to society. 66-year-old Hyneman grew up Methodist, but found her calling as a Quaker minister with a passion for using art as a vehicle for social justice. She went to Pacific School of Religion, where she earned a Master of Arts and a Master of Divinity with a concentration in theology and art. I first talked with Hyneman by phone during the creation of the nation's first tiny house village for young adults ages 18 to 24. The vibrantly painted community in Oakland, California, is called Youth Spirit Artworks Tiny House Empowerment Village. It opened in 2021 and provides 2 years of stability and job training for 22 young people from Oakland and Berkeley. It was developed by Youth Spirit Artworks, the nonprofit Hyneman founded in Berkeley in 2007. The pandemic put our plans for an in-person meeting on hold. I finally met Hyneman in person in April 2023 in Richmond, California, 20 miles northeast of San Francisco, on the site of the second tiny house village for young adults. The Richmond Tiny House Village Farm and Garden will provide housing and offer culinary training for the residents. Always encouraging young people to be involved in art and social justice, Hyneman brought to our meeting 2 young adults, Inti Gonzalez and Toriana Findlay, who she's known for many years through Youth Spirit Artworks and community projects. I asked Hyneman about the Richmond project as we stood on the site in the midst of traffic, a car repair shop, and nearby BART trains. Sally, what's this project you're doing now in this location? What's it about and where are we?
This is a youth tiny house village. It is Richmond's first tiny house village, and it's emergency shelter that will be serving unsheltered Richmond young people ages 18 to 24.
Oh, how many people will be able to live here?
There will be 12 people living here ultimately, and it will double the number of dedicated emergency housing units serving Richmond young people.
And what is this site? Like, where is it? How big is it? What's on the site?
The site is 1.25 acres, and it is in really central Richmond. It's a vacant property that's been vacant for a very long time that's owned by the city of Richmond and is being leased to the Richmond Police Activities League.
What's Richmond like? Why did you pick this for this youth village?
We were told that Richmond really had not been able to come to any agreement and willingness to create a tiny house village. And tiny house villages have been sprouting up around the country as an emergency housing response for unsheltered people that has been really effective. And so we wanted to try to do something to encourage Richmond to experiment more with building tiny house villages and using tiny house villages as a model to serve homeless people. And so we're approaching Richmond to do this as a pilot project toward doing other tiny house villages on other property that it owns.
Right. And it's really right in the middle. I mean, it's obviously there's a train going by. There's a lot of trucks and traffic. But it's its own little space. How would you describe Richmond? I mean, it's north of Oakland and San Francisco.
Yeah, it's here in San Francisco's East Bay. And it's a medium-sized city. Richmond is a similar size to Berkeley down the way, but has been a more industrial community. Chevron opened its refinery here in like 1902 or 1903, and so it's been a big. Of course, it was Kaiser's shipbuilding was headquartered here, and there was just a huge operation for doing shipbuilding during World War II. So it's got a really amazing history. It's a very diverse community. And it's a community that's been dealing with serious poverty issues.
One of the young adults helping to lead the Richmond Project is 22-year-old Inti Gonzalez.
Well, first of all, I have worked with Sally before, and it was good. So and I was a part of the previous tiny house village. I mainly helped with the 1.5-acre ground mural, and I also did my own solo mural there as well.
There's a huge mural. Wow. 1.5-acre ground mural?
Right, yeah. I helped quite a bit with the designing of it, so I helped make some major design changes and helped with a little bit with the painting as well.
Did you have art training before? Now, were you interested? Have you always been artistic?
When I was young, my mom always had like art supplies kind of around, and I pretty much just got really into drawing and stuff. I don't really have art training, but I did really get into it when I was young, so I became pretty proficient at it. I also did like Photoshop and learned some design. Later, I had a little bit of like design training and stuff like that. That's mainly what I'm good at, and that's actually also kind of what I get paid for most of the time. Even with the Tiny Village Spirit, I'm pretty much the designer for that. Even though it's not really what I want to get into, it's more of like, if I were to choose, it's more of a hobby. But, you know, that's what I'm good at, so it's what I currently do.
Where are you from in the Bay Area? Are you from the Bay Area, I guess?
Yeah, I lived most of my life in Berkeley, but for the past few years, I lived in Richmond and then El Sobrante. Going to be moving to Oakland soon.
So you've actually lived in this community where the new tiny houses are going to be?
Yes, I have. Well, I did live more up in the hill parts. I mean, it's definitely different from Berkeley. There's not quite as much happening, and I guess definitely a lot more older people, at least in the hills. But a lot of musicians in Richmond, interestingly enough, as well, and El Sobrante, but mostly Richmond.
Really?
Yeah, but usually older musicians, what I've noticed at least.
It's interesting. That's like something you can... you know, maybe bring people out for it, or, you know.
Right, exactly. I did attend some of the events and help set some of them up, so it was interesting to find that out about, you know, each city is different in its own way.
Another young adult involved in the Richmond Tiny House Village is 27-year-old Toriana Finley.
Currently, I am a organizer with the Tiny Village Spirit.
And when did you first come in contact with this group or start being involved with them?
Well, actually, I became involved with Sally when I was 15 years old with her Youth Spirit Artworks job training program through art, and I've just been in contact with her ever since. I was part of the program for a couple years, and then I became like a peer mentor coordinator in the program, and then I basically used those skills, and I obtained a job across the street from it was next door, and then it became across the street from Youth Spirit Artworks, and I kind of just went off from there. I went to college, and I had a few more jobs, and then I've just been around, and Sally kept in contact with me saying how, you know, it might be cool if I do some social work education so I could come back and do some social work for Youth Spirit Artworks, but that never really panned out because I kind of wanted to go into the medical field. And so Sally contacted me about this project that we're doing out here in Richmond because I'm actually from Richmond. And I felt like the project was very important and it kind of meant something to me. So I came back and got on board.
Do you live in Richmond now?
I currently live in Hayward.
What was going on in your life when you started with this program at 15?
I was living with my grandparents. My mom kicked me out at 15. We had like a few differences. And my grandparents kind of sort of already were raising me before that because my mom was a teenage parent. She had me at 15. And so, like, you know, things were a little rocky. She was growing up while still trying to learn how to be someone's parent. You know, how are you going to help someone grow up if you're still growing up? So I was living with my grandparents. I ended up getting diagnosed with like some health issues. I have like Graves' disease and other things. So I wasn't really able to attend regular classes like in a regular school. So I ended up doing independent study. And I had a friend named Tiferet, and that's how I ended up coming across YSA while I was doing independent study. So I had a lot of free time since I wasn't in regular classes, and I was able to go and be there, you know, from, I can't remember the times, but you know, in the evenings I was able to spend a lot of time there, and I learned how to use acrylic paint with brushes. I learned how to sketch and draw. I got to work on cool murals around the town, mosaic and with spray paint and acrylic.
Were you interested in art before that?
No, actually, I was not interested in art in that media, I would say. I was more interested in, like, fashion, clothing, making things from hand, crocheting, knitting, sewing. And then my friend, she's an amazing artist. And I just always would say, like, man, I wish one day I could draw like you or paint like you. And she was like, well, guess what? I know a place where you can learn how to do that.
That's great. Did that art affect you in any way as far as your outlook? I mean, because you were painting murals and things.
Yes, actually, it did change my outlook. It showed me that a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds can come together to make something amazing. I also learned that these murals mean a lot to people in these towns, and it, you know, uplifts a lot of people's spirits, and it also depicts, you know, how people see each other.
I didn't really think of that. Do people tell you that about the murals?
Yes, actually. I've been told a lot that murals, you know, lift people's spirits and make them feel better to come out and see something beautiful. You know, especially if you're living in an area where it's a lot of, like, poverty and dirtiness and it's unkempt and, you know, the city's not taking care of it and you're seeing rundown houses and broken down cars, you know, to come out and see something beautiful like that can brighten someone's day.
Did this program help you learn leadership skills?
Yes, it did, actually. This program taught me how to be able to stand up in front of different groups of people and speak. It taught me how to sit down and formulate paperwork, you know, if we were maybe interested in grant writing and things like that. It taught me how to articulate myself in a manner when I'm trying to get people to purchase my art. And it taught me that I can also kind of be my own boss, create my own things, and get my own things out there as well.
Now, you didn't live in the youth village. Right?
No.
Did you help with it?
No, I actually was not a part of that project.
Okay. Anything else you want to say to people who maybe, especially young people who think, oh, I don't need to finish school, or, you know, I don't know, they don't know what their own talents are. What would you say to them?
I guess I would say that, you know, it's okay if you're lost right now, but try to find your own path. There's plenty of things out there that you can be good at, you know, and maybe if you feel like you're not good at school, pick up a trade, learn how to do something, you know, perfect your own crafts. There's so many things that, you know, you could actually be good at and you never knew. Like, I didn't know that I would be a great painter, but, you know, I learned and here we are. Just never give up on yourself. It's okay to have a little doubt and it's always okay to start over again.
The spirit, vision, and leadership of young adults are essential elements in creating the tiny house villages. Heinemann says those priorities are a foundation set with the creation of the first village in Oakland.
The first tiny house village that we built is called the Youth Spirit Artworks Tiny House Empowerment Village. And that was the first youth tiny house village in the United States and was all organized almost 100% by young people.
And in that village now, how many people live there and how is it going? Do they move out? Do they stay there? What do they do?
There's a 2-year limit on how long young people can stay. And there's a case management staff, including housing navigation, that works with youth to find housing. So by the end of 2 years, young people can be housed and hopefully living independently. And they get a lot of supportive services while living there and, you know, wraparound services. So works helping people set personal and vocational goals and meeting those goals.
And what's the second village called?
The second village is called Richmond Tiny House Village Farm and Garden.
And so that sounds interesting. What's the plan for that?
Well, we have a 7-agency collaborative, and we're connected with actually the police, Richmond Police Activities League, that's creating a farm and garden, a culinary training program, which is very exciting and innovative. And so young people that live at the Tiny House Village will have the opportunity, if they want to be involved in getting training in culinary arts and working with the farm and garden. So the farm and garden will be on the same site as the Tiny House Village, will be separate and have separate entrances for safety purposes, but youth will have the opportunity to get involved in the farm and garden if they choose to.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the vision around the culinary training program is wonderful because it really teaches youth about eating good food and healthy food and taking care of themselves, as well as about jobs in the culinary area.
We have a lot of trains going by here. I guess, I mean, that's going to be just like living in any city.
Yes.
Yeah.
They'll be living here. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that we feel really excited about with this tiny house village is that it's near public transportation. So it's kind of exciting that that public transportation is going by us during this interview.
Right. It's actually walking distance to the BART station in Richmond.
Heinemann's skill in gathering support from many community and religious groups made these villages a reality. The first project in Oakland was built with the support of 45 organizations, including churches, synagogues, schools, businesses, community groups, and more than 2,000 volunteers. The Richmond project will cost nearly $1 million. Funding includes $65,000 from a county sales tax and financial support from many community and religious groups, including $120,000 from Mormon organizations. A group of young volunteers from the Mormon Temple in Oakland have been helping with painting and construction. In addition, more than 100 Jewish teenagers from area congregations are painting prayers and blessings on the fence planks that surround the village. The tiny house villages are a natural development in Heinemann's lifelong path of compassion, creativity, and determination to offer support and opportunity to people struggling and on the margins. She says the seed of her passion for social justice was planted when she was 6 years old, in first grade, and came home for lunch one day. The family's cleaning lady, Ida, had young Sally listen to Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream" speech. As the years went by, Heinemann saw the dramatic differences in people's lives. For instance, the cleaning lady's 13-year-old son was shot by a gang member. Meanwhile, Heinemann's mother took her shopping at Saks Fifth Avenue, and the family was deciding whether to go to Jamaica for spring break. Heinemann followed her heart and the unfolding path that led her to becoming a Quaker minister.
And I got involved with young friends when I was in my 20s, and I've been involved with the Society of Friends with Quakers, became a member in 1984. So I'm really driven by my Quaker faith and calling around Quaker ministry and the potential that progressive faith communities have to make positive change out in the world. And really, felt a calling to as a Quaker leader project the message of Quakerism around the world and in the work that I do, and so the involvement that I have in art for social justice really comes out of my Quaker faith.
You know, I'm wondering how you kept your vision.
I mean, I've been more struck by the gap between the rich and the poor the last, 50 years of my life, and the fact that there's some people that are really doing well and have, mega mansions with 100 rooms, and that they spend $17 million buying, and they might have 11 of those, and then there's other people that are being forced to live in encampments and in doorways and under our freeways. And I just think that in the richest country in the world, to have this gap between the rich and the poor, where we don't all have the things that we need in order to thrive and prosper, is just, it's a disgrace and something that's just very moving to me. Even this last Sunday, I was bike riding with my husband, and we went through an underpass, and there were all these people that were, in tents with all their worldly goods packed around them. And it's just, to me, it's just an absolute disgrace to see so many people that are suffering and barely able to survive. And this winter, just getting, pelted with rain out in the elements, just, with their lives at risk, when other people are just, flying on their private jets and living as though there weren't that poverty. And so I just think that all of us, I really believe in the adage of loving your neighbor as yourself. And I see it as, if we're going to love our neighbor, that includes our unsheltered neighbor. And that includes helping our neighbor get sheltered and helping our neighbor get the things that they need in order to thrive and prosper.
A lot of people, and these are political arguments, people can work. Why don't they work? Oh, we don't want to give government money because I don't want my taxes to go to that. There's a lot of argument. People who are homeless aren't trying. They don't want to work, or they don't, people don't want to go to a shelter because they don't want to stay inside.
I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that tell themselves that, for example, what you were mentioning, that that people should just get jobs. And, you know, when you live in a gated community or you live separate from people that are dealing with poverty and living on the margins, you can say that to yourself. You have the kind of luxury of being separated from those who are suffering in your midst, who are bleeding at your doorstep in a way. You have the luxury to sit there as a separate person who's not interacting with them and dealing with the things they're dealing with. You can say that to yourself, that they should just get jobs. But in fact, when you actually go and meet people and start to learn about what people are experiencing, a lot of people aren't going to be able to get jobs. A lot of people are dealing with really serious problems and challenges that are making it super hard for them to go be that person that just gets a job. So
what kind of challenges?
Well, like, for example, post-traumatic stress disorder and trauma and mental health issues. You know, there's a lot of people who are going to do the best they can to work at to the best of their ability, but they're not going to be cut out emotionally and psychologically to be able to just have that perfect full-time job and support themselves. And where we live here in the Bay Area, the equation doesn't add up for many, many people. You have to have an incredible, very large income in order to make it here in the Bay Area just to pay rent. So the idea that people are just going to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and be able to all support themselves is just simply, it's a false statement. It's a false story. It's a false narrative.
Interfaith is an essential element in Heinemann's life, personally and professionally. Her husband is Jewish and a developer of affordable housing. Heinemann is active in the synagogue as well as the Quaker community. The couple has a 22-year-old adopted daughter who is Roma from Bulgaria. As we stand on the site of the second tiny house village for unhoused youth, Heinemann says she continues to encourage young adults to work with community leaders to develop the project.
So my deep calling and interest is in being involved in art for social justice from a faith base, and really being involved in working with people on the margins in making their voices heard creatively towards creating positive social change.
Heinemann's latest professional title is simply coordinator, Tiny Village Spirit. That spirit led to the September 2023 ground honoring ceremony for the Richmond Tiny House Village, Farm, and Garden, where young people will grow vegetables along with job skills and independence. The village is expected to welcome its first residents in December 2024. Music for the Age of Being Real is Kites Over the Ocean by the Kentucky Standard Band from their album Angels of Mercy. For the Age of Being Real, I'm Rhonda Miller.